Hello, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester. I'm the creator and executive producer of the Cooking Without Looking show and podcast. And welcome to our new season of podcasts. And they're brought to you by Blind United. Blind United is on Facebook. They have the Blind United interest groups. You can go there, have a lot of fun. You can cook and learn and do whatever you want. And their motto is building bridges, closing the gap, making connections. And today we're here with Tara Coyne. Welcome, Tara.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. Where are you calling from?
So I'm calling from Minnesota.
Oh, wow. How's the weather over there?
Right now it's lovely, but it was a long winter. The snow didn't really melt till April this year.
Oh my God. I think I saw that. I'm originally from Wisconsin, so I can feel your pain sort of after 37 years in Miami. But I still do remember what it was like when it seemed like the snow would ever end. And just tell us a little bit about yourself to start off.
Well, my name is Tara Coyne, and I was originally born in New York and raised in Georgia. So a lot of my friends and family thought I was crazy when I told them that I was going to stay in Minnesota because I started going blind at the age of 21 is when I was diagnosed, and I'm now 33.
Oh, wow. What took him so long?
That's a great question. I don't know. I grew up, quote unquote, sighted. I wore glasses since the age of third grade. I don't know, because I started wearing contacts when I was 18, and every year they want you to get an eye exam. So, there's nothing like horribly wrong or dangerous, or whatever. And they saw something on my retina when I was, I guess, 20, I guess. And then they sent me to another doctor, to another doctor, to another doctor. And then, lo and behold, guess what? You're going to go blind. Oh, that's awesome. Anyways.
They said it like that?
Well, yes and no. Like, there was this retinal doctor. He had very poor bed manner side. And he's like, well, go blind. I'm like, but I love my colors. I was like, well, you're going blind.
Oh my God.
So actually, I was in denial for a hot minute. I didn't say he was stupid, but I didn't believe him. So the next doctor I really actually did believe, because she was nice about it.
Well, you couldn't really help. I mean, like after that, it's sort of like, hey, you got cancer.
Well, I mean, I guess. Anyways. But I have retinitis pigmentosa, so they told me eventually I'll go completely blind, but I am right now legally blind.
So how much do you see, Tara?
It depends on the day, honestly. And I know that that's, not a great answer, but that's
No,
the
no.
truth is, it's
We
different in
can see
everybody
more.
because it's the gene mutation.
Wow. And as we were talking a little bit earlier, usually that's seen as something that's in your family, but you said that everyone was tested and no one else had it.
Yeah, so a lot of my family members wear glasses, but nobody else in my family has the gene mutation. Only I do. So they're 95% certain that the gene is recessive, that both of my parents had the recessive gene. And when they had me, it became dominant.
Wow, that's interesting. But it took so long for them to figure it out. I'm still not over that part. But tell us a little bit about your life. Your school life was just sort of like regular, or what?
Yeah, I had a regular school life. I had a regular growing up. So I wore glasses off and on since the third grade. I needed them to read, and to see, like, the blackboard, chalkboard, whatever you want to call it. So it was okay. I mean, school was a little boring because it wasn't ever really challenging. So I went to culinary school right after high school because I knew I wanted to cook, But in high school is when I really found like the passion for baking. So I have an associate's degree in baking and pastry. I went to the Art Institute of Atlanta and graduated in 2011. And that's around the time I found out that I was starting to go blind.
Wow. So, how did you react to that? I know you said you felt bad for a hot minute, but how did you move on from there?
You know, I had a really good support group. Like my family was really good about it, and I had friends that never really like saw me as quote unquote blind. Hell, even some of my friends forgot I was blind
You know,
because
that
they didn't
happens to
care.
me. That happens to me sometimes with people who, my friends who are blind. I'll totally forget and go, "Oh my God, wait a minute."
This one time we were drinking, I was not, but they were,
Sure.
and we were like, let's go to Waffle House. I was like, okay, cool. So, you know, somebody actually handed me their keys because I had just given up my license too.
Oh
And somebody
no.
handed me their keys, and I had my cane and my sunglasses. I was like, all right, guys, what's wrong with this picture? And they're like, oh my gosh, she's blind. I'm like, that's okay, guys, I'll get pizza. But, you know, it was always a good laugh. And, you know, I always loved that my friends never like, you know, or like, oh, you poor kid, go sit in the corner, you're blind.
Right,
So I
right.
had a really good support group, and my parents always taught me that if you wanted something, that you got to go work for it. And, you know, maybe I have to work harder at it. And, you know, sometimes you do. And, you know, the reason I came to Minnesota was because Minnesota has a blind school called Blind Incorporated. So I came here in 2018 to Minnesota to get some tips and tricks to, you know, be prepared for when I do go completely blind, because I don't want to sit in the corner and, you know, peel potatoes
Right.
all day long. Well, okay, that's an exaggeration. But you know what I mean? I don't want to be treated like I'm blind. And I'm great that I had that opportunity. And then I also taught at Blind Incorporated as the senior program instructor for about 2 years. And
How'd that go?
before, it was really good. I did have to quit for some medical reasons, but you know, we're still trying to figure out life, and that's life. But I always told my students, you know, you can have that 5 minutes and go cry in the corner, but you better come out swinging because we got stuff to do. Let's finish. And you know,
I like that.
my parents always told me that, you know, you can cry about it because that's life and you're allowed to have those feelings. But, you know, it's what you make of your life.
I like that. I like that a lot. And that's like for anybody, really. All of us can use that.
And I also worked for Target Center for about a year. The reason that I don't work there anymore is because of the silly pandemic. We all got laid off, but that was a really fun job. I was a prep cook there, and the smallest crowd that we cooked for was 5,000, and the largest crowd we cooked for was like 20,000. And I was like
Oh
one
my
out of
God.
two blind people that actually worked at the at Target Center, out of like 1,000 or so employees, which was really fun.
Is that in Minneapolis, Tara?
It is. It's in downtown Minneapolis, over by Target Field. Target Center and Target Field are by each other.
Oh, wow. My brother lives in Owatonna, so I'm only slightly familiar with Minnesota. But that's so cool. My God, what did you make for those 20,000 people?
So I was a prep cook for the concession stand, but also if they needed us upstairs in the sweet boxes, I would go up there and help prep things. But like we cut like a lot of like lemons and limes for the bars. We had to, you know, cut all the fresh vegetables because it was like 50% processed and 50% fresh. So I had to rub about 20, 30 to 40 like briskets that were like 20 to 50 pounds per brisket with the
Wow.
rub, and we would what's it called, smoke them in the smoker for like 24 hours because we had like brisket shops and stuff like that. So yeah, it was always really fun. It was always different, always interesting.
So if it was smoking there for like the 24 to 26 hours, do they have people just sitting there waiting for it?
No, we would have a day of prep and then the next day would be the event. So you would put it in towards the end of the shift and then the next day when you would come back, it would be ready.
But do they have people like waiting there for it, like in case it's on fire?
No.
No.
Nope. So as long as it's like really low, it's okay to have it on.
Well, that's a good point because I cook meat like that in my oven sometimes. I just put it on like on 200 and then I cook it overnight and it comes out very nicely. But
It's the same way I do my ribs. I roast them for about 5 hours at like 275 and they fall off the bone and they're so beautiful. I
I know, it's so good. Oh man, Tara, you're making me hungry now.
have.
Well, now, did you get back into baking? I know you bake for yourself, right, and your family.
Yes, I do. Couple weeks ago, I made some cookies for a friend. I bake whenever. Right now I'm trying to figure it out because I have what's called gastroparesis, so I can't really, eat all the baked goods anymore per se because there's a lot of fat in a lot of baked goods. So, we're gonna play with some of our recipes so we can still eat what we want.
Sure. Now, how do you have to eat? How are you cutting your fats out of there, out of what you eat?
So you have to read the label of everything just to make sure that you're, only eating. I can only eat 50 grams of fat, and then I have extremely low fiber content. So I eat a very low fiber, low fat diet. So you just have to read the package, and then because you look on the internet and see what the different fat content is, and then butter is a lot more of a fat content than versus like olive oil or like a canola oil or something like that. And then you just cook you try to cook really clean without using a lot of oil. Like I'll use the spray can with my vegetables if I can have a vegetable. And you just spray it a little bit and it still has the same results.
So I take it you're not buttering your corn this
I
summer.
can't have corn because of the fiber content, but yes,
Oh.
I would not butter it. I would just spray a little oil on it and then, rub the seasonings on it, and then it would be the same thing.
Now, for our listeners, could you briefly describe, because we were talking the other day, could you briefly describe what it is that you have? Because I honestly have never heard of it, and I was trying to like think about how you must deal with it. So tell us just a little bit about what it actually is.
So gastroparesis is your stomach, paresis is paralysis. So your stomach is technically frozen. Some of the nerves and muscle fibers in your stomach are not working correctly. Mine is idiopathic. A lot of people, it's from diabetes. Their nerve endings die from really high diabetes, but mine is idiopathic. They don't know how it happened. But your stomach is frozen to where it doesn't digest your food correctly, and your intestines and stomach are not working correctly to process the food. So my food sits in my stomach for about 4 hours or longer. So I don't know when I'm hungry. I have to figure that out by, my therapist,
Wow.
kind of like prescription food. So it's been hard, but it's been interesting, and I've still been cooking too, bring me happiness because I love cooking. But yeah, so a lot of people who have gastroparesis have a lot of constipation because they can't eat the fiber, and it is what it is.
Yeah, I can't imagine not knowing when I'm hungry. Actually, I know sometimes I eat when I'm not hungry. I know that.
And also, you can't eat large portions because of the food is sitting in there for so long that you eat smaller portions. So I'm told that I need to eat between 4 to 8 times a day, very small meals. So I eat smaller meals and I eat a low fat and low fiber diet. And then there's also, it's called a gastroparesis diet, which is on the internet, but it tells you the foods that you can eat and the foods that you can't eat. And sometimes I still have flares when I eat the food I'm allowed to, but it's a lot of vegetables you can't have. You can have a couple of vegetables, but you have to peel them so you don't have the fiber in it. Like zucchini, I can still roast that, and it's actually really good, even though there's no peel, because that's the best part, I think. But anyways, it's just a different like lifestyle, but it's okay. I'm adjusting, and I can't eat like whole wheat, which I loved whole wheat. I can only eat white
Well, you
because
can
of
always have my
the
whole wheat. I'll send it to you.
fiber.
But Tara, so your recipe for the peanut butter cookies is up on our website at cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. Under the blog, it's the recipe of the day. Tell us about your recipe and how you prepare it.
So I have peanut butter cookies is our recipe, and it's really, really easy. There's no flour in it, so technically it can be gluten-free. It is a 1-to-1-to-1 ratio of 1 cup peanut butter, and you can use smooth or crunchy. I've used crunchy before, but a lot of people like the smoother one better. But anyways, to each your own preference. Anyways,
That's right.
1 cup of sugar. And one egg. And then, if you want to be, I guess you can't have eggs, you can use an egg substitution, which, if I remember correctly, it's a fourth of a cup of like the egg beater equals one egg. So you preheat your oven to 375, and you combine all your ingredients in one bowl. And you can use a stand mixer, you can use an electric mixer, you can use your hand, you can use a spoon, as long as it gets combined all the way together correctly. It'll be like really smooth texture. And then you will make about a tablespoon of a ball, or you can use a ice cream scooper or cookie scooper to get a more even distribution. But I make them so often that I don't use the cookie scoop anymore. I can just eyeball it by how it feels in my hand of how big it is. You want to put them on a cookie sheet, about 12 on a cookie sheet. Two fingers in between the cookies, and that's because it's going to spread. So that gives the cookie enough room to spread. You want two fingers between the cookie and between the actual cookie sheet. So when it spreads, it's not going to hit the pan or hit another cookie and become a cookie cake, even though cookie cake is really good. To get the really cute and pretty design that's on top of the peanut butter cookie that's classic, you really just use a fork and you put it horizontally and press very lightly, and then you put it up vertically and press lightly, and that's how you get the crisscross pattern that everybody loves to see on that peanut butter cookie. You don't have to have the crisscross pattern, but if you don't do the crisscross, then you want to lightly push down the cookie so it actually spread. You bake it in the oven, depending on your oven, because every oven is different, from about 10 to 12 minutes. My oven is about 11 minutes, or until golden brown. You can't see golden brown, so what we do is we touch the edge of the cookies to see if they're firm or if they're loose. If they're loose, you put it in for about 2 to 3 more minutes, but you want a firm edge on the edge of the cookie. You don't ever want to put your finger in the center of the cookie, because that's always going to be loose, because that's the base of the cookie. So that's why we check the edge of the cookie, and you're going to see if the cookie is done or not on the edge.
Oh, wow. That sounds great. It's funny because I had forgotten about the little crisscrosses that people do on the peanut butter cookies. And then when I was looking for a photo for your recipe, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this. I wonder, Tara, do you know why they do that to the peanut butter cookies?
I guess for aesthetics, I really don't know. I mean, it's pretty.
It is pretty, and it looks like, I want to play tic-tac-toe when I see it.
I know, right? I've also used these cookies, and if you ever seen like the peanut butter blossoms with the Hershey Kiss on top, I've used that too. And how
Nice.
you do it is right after you pull them out the oven is when you put the Hershey Kiss on it, so the chocolate melts a little bit and sticks to the cookie.
Oh, I love those. Those are great. And they're fun around the holidays too. You see those oftentimes for that.
Yeah, I've also put about like a teaspoon or half a teaspoon of cinnamon in the batter because cinnamon goes well with peanut butter as well.
Oh, that's a great tip. I would have never thought of that. Is that something you figured out yourself that you noticed?
So I have a friend that really loves cinnamon, and when I made them cookies one time, they asked me if I could put cinnamon in it. And I know that cinnamon goes well with peanut butter because as a kid, I used to eat cinnamon and sugar peanut butter toast.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, I never thought about the combination of the two at all. That sounds wonderful. Well, tell us, what are your thoughts, for anyone who might find themselves, and you're a young person, anyone who might find themselves losing their eyesight, what is your advice to them?
I guess my advice would be, just because you're gonna go blind or you have a horrible diagnosis, because I've had a lot of medical problems, is don't let it get you down. Yeah, you can have your 5 minutes or hour or however long you need to have your moment, because it's hard. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I would tell my students every time, it's not easy, it's hard. But you're here to learn and figure it out. Because nobody really gives you a roadmap or a handbook like, this is how you go blind or this is how you deal with life. You don't get
Right.
a handbook. So I mean, you're allowed to have that moment or however many moments you need. I mean, hell, sometimes I still have a moment and it's not just with my blindness, but it's what you make of that moment is what my parents always told me. So I mean, having a really good support system is always key with whatever happens to you. And then, just keep trying, keep doing what you need to. And it only takes one yes to get your foot in the door. I've heard a lot of no's in, the culinary field. It only took that one yes to get me in. The first time I actually like started being in the culinary field was I had this internship at the American Indian Center that one of my instructors, Dick Davis, took me to because he had found out I was going to stay and he was trying to help me find like a job. And that was the first time the chef didn't care that I was blind, didn't care that I had like almost no experience, but I did have culinary experience. He loved my resume. And that day at the interview, he was like, "You want to start today?" I go, "Sure, I'll start." And I mean, yeah, it was a lot of cleaning. There was some cooking, but it was mostly cleaning and washing dishes. But it only takes that one yes to get your foot in the door, and then you can go from there. It's whatever you make of your life or whatever you make of your situations. And yeah, you can have that moment, but don't let it get you down.
Well, and don't let it keep you down, right? And that's for all of us. But, well, Tara, if someone wants to reach out to you, how do they contact you?
My email address is terracoin21@gmail.com. So TARACOYNE 21@gmail.com.
Okay, that's great. And Tara, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. It sounds like you're a very upbeat person and you just keep on keeping on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And again, everyone listening, we were sponsored by Blind United Sponsorship, Blind United, the Blind United Interest Groups on Facebook. Our motto is building bridges, closing the gap, making connections. And again, this is Renee Rentmeester, Cooking Without Looking TV show. Our motto is changing the way we see blindness. And if you want to reach out to us, you can go to our website, www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. Thank you again, Tara. Have a wonderful day.